Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We're here to empower people. We look for the truth. We do not accept identity politics, nor do we accept ideologies, nor do we accept the corporate liberal or democratic or conservative and Republican establishments, authorities on any topic, because almost always it's self-serving. Health, you bet. We all need it. But if you looked at all of our major institutions, let's just stop for a moment and think of this. We're spending $3.4 trillion this year on our health care. Nowhere in there is their preventative program. Now, that's easy to do. There are hundreds of thousands of scientists, public health officials, physicians who know that a healthy Mediterranean-based or plant-based diet, principally, exercise, stress management, proper supplementation, a healthy and clean environment, all contribute to the prevention of disease and the amelioration of those same illnesses. Not a word, not a program, nothing. Instead, we promote drugs. Many times these drugs are known beforehand not to have statistically significant benefits, but very serious side effects. We do it anyhow. We try to convince people by television advertisements that something's wrong with them. We pathologize behavior so we can then sell them something. And when enough people over a period of time begin to believe the ads and the actors disguised as doctors in these ads, then we openly allow our mind and body to be infiltrated and seeded with propaganda. And all that is against our best interest. And this is how we live our lives. So on this program, we try to get to the truth. And if it means pushing back against what is the consensus of the day, I'm only too happy to do that, because I rarely, if ever, find the consensus to be right about anything. So we intend to be controversial, because we're going to take on topics that are generally already set in stone by the establishment. Vaccines are safe and effective, but they're not. We have scholarship and truth. They have propaganda and unlimited amounts of money to try to convince people of a lie. Right now, they're winning. On all issues, they're winning. So this is where we try to get a different perspective, and that's what we're going to share today. As you will see from commentaries, that we're going to take on some important and sacred cows out there. We're going to tell you the truth about the coming climate famine anarchy by Dr. Glenn Berry, and some of the issues with personal politics that are driving people crazy. And also, why aren't we paying attention to 4 million people displaced and dying in the Congo? Could it be because we're exploiting their minerals for our cell phones and computers? We'll talk about that. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. Let's begin. Published in the Advances in Clinical and Experimental Medicine, a Wrocław Medical University in Poland reported the outcome of a study that found greater eradication rates of Helicobacter pylori. That's the infection that we say is the cause of ulcers or the beginning of stomach cancer. It's a bacterium, and its causative role in the development of chronic gastritis, peptic ulcers, mucosal-associated lymphoid tissue, lymphomas, and even gastric cancers makes it successful eradication of critical importance in anyone who has it. They found that vitamin D, simple vitamin D, could improve killing it. Now, if you add vitamin D with cabbage juice, raw cabbage juice, or if you don't have that, sauerkraut juice, also can kill it. Add in some quercetin at 1,000, 2,000 milligrams, and vitamin C at the same potency, and you really kill it. Throw in a teaspoon of Manuka honey and a teaspoon of bee propolis, and you're eradicating it. Just important stuff. A lot of people use fluoride. I've written extensively on it. You can read the article. It's updated on a regular basis with the latest science. I wrote the article over 30 years ago called The Fluoride Fiasco. I simply showed that there is no convincing science to prove that fluoride is an essential nutrient, benefits our bodies, and the lies about it preventing tooth decay. But there's an awful lot that it does wrong. I remember going to Washington, D.C. and interviewing a Dr. Dean Burke. At that time, one of the heads of the National Cancer Institute, scientist. And Dr. Dean Burke, who also helped found the National Cancer Institute, stated on the air, because I came back and broadcast this on my WMCA program back in 1975, that fluoride in the drinking water causes about 15,000 cancers deaths a year. Now, he was immediately attacked by the different establishment cancer groups, but he had the facts. They did not. He had done the research. He was credentialed. He was an expert in his field. They were not. And yet, his information on fluoride causing cancer didn't get any attention. So now there's some new information. And this new information that we have received from GreenMed Info is that our pineal gland, now that's a gland that it's known as the seat of soul for hundreds of years. And they wanted to know, what would fluoride do to this tiny little gland in the middle of our brain? And they found that it calcifies it. In effect, it turns it to stone. Research showed that fluoride deposits in the pineal gland, the more we age, the more it deposits. And that enhances gland calcification. And then they took a look at cadavers and then the pineal gland. Quote, there was positive correlation between pineal gland and fluoride and calcium, but no correlation between pineal and bone. By old age, the pineal gland had readily accumulated its calcium ratio higher than bone. Now, this is not the first research to implicate fluoride in contributing to the so-called ectopic calcification, or the calcification of soft tissue. I've talked about that in previous programs, where fluoride contributes to the calcification of our arteries. Let me go back for a moment. The pineal gland, P-I-N-E-A-L, pineal, is a small endocrine gland in the vertebrae of the brain. And it's sometimes called the third eye, as it is light sensitive and centrally located with cellular features resembling the human retina. We need it. And the pineal gland is best known for its role in producing the hormone melatonin from serotonin, triggered by the absence of light. And it affects wake and sleep patterns and seasonal circadian rhythms. And like a tiny pea-sized pine cone, it is located near the center of the brain between the two hemispheres. And it's a unique brain structure insofar as it is not protected by the blood-brain barrier. And this may also explain why it is uniquely sensitive to calcification via fluoride exposure. And technically, the mammalian pineal gland is a neural tissue. That means, without being too technical, that the cells within the pineal gland, the pinealocytes, have characteristics that resemble the photoreceptor cells in the retina. This has given rise to the opinion that it should be reclassified. So the pineal gland has been a subject of much interest since ancient times. Galen described it in the 3rd century, and the philosopher René Descartes identified the pineal gland as the seat of the soul. And And so what we have is we have this tiny little very important gland, and then we end up with what amounts to calcium stones, not in the kidneys, but in the brain. Because pineal gland calcifications upon dissection resemble gravel and are composed of calcite, which is calcium carbonate. And the calcium that is not used easily in the body. So what does all this mean? It means this. If your pineal gland calcifies, you're more susceptible to Alzheimer's, bipolar, circadian dysregulation, hormone imbalances, meaning low melatonin, insomnia, low back pain, Parkinson's, sleep disorders, and stroke. One more reason not to use fluoride. From the University of São Paulo, which is in Brazil, they did a study, and I decided to select this study simply to show you how they set up a study. And if you read the scientific literature, this is how it goes. It starts off with the objectives. Quote, estrogen and phytoestrogens, mainly isoflavones, treatment has been suggested to improve mood, behavior, and cognitive function in postmenopausal women. However, there's a lack of information on the mechanism of such treatment on the central nervous system. We use rats to investigate the effects of long-term treatment with commercial isoflavones on behavior, hormones, and brain neurotransmitter levels. Methods. Then it talks about the methods. Results. Then it gives you the results. And then finally, discussion. Here's what the discussion says in the study. These findings show that long-term treatment with isoflavones decreased total body weight gain, facilitated spatial memory performance, and this may be involved with the increase in estradiol levels as well as increase in GABA and glutamate levels. Furthermore, isoflavon treatment may attenuate age-related cognitive impairment and may therefore be an effective tool to combat this undesirable feature of the natural aging process. In lay language, by taking the isoflavones, and the best place to get that would be soy, non-genetically engineered organic soy, soy milk, soy, let's say it's tempeh, tofu, any of the soy, soy protein. You can literally improve your brain, reduce your body weight, eliminate a lot of body fat. So it's good. Just another study. From, well, let's see, babies fed, a soy-based formula, have changes in reproductive system tissues from Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. Now, that's a formula. I'm opposed to formulas pretty much, especially the Nestle's formulas, which was the number one worldwide formula. And I believe that natural breastfeeding, especially when the mother is conscious that what she eats and consumes and drinks can be passed on to the developing child, that this is extremely important because a healthy mother who breastfeeds for at least 6 months to a year creates a very healthy child. And, quote, this is from the study, soy formula containing high concentrations of plant-based estrogen-like compounds, because this formula is the sole food source for many babies in the first 6 months of life, it's important to understand the effects of exposure to such compounds during the critical period of development. And this was published in the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism. And it just shows that a lot of women who are not breastfeeding end up with these soys, the soy, and it can provide a lot of the nutrients, but it cannot provide the immune-modulating nutrients that breast milk can. So always go first with breast milk. And for men, Taipei Medical School in Taiwan showed that Alzheimer's disease is associated with prostate cancer. That's correct. According to new reporting out of Taiwan, quote, Alzheimer's disease and cancer are increasingly prevalent with advancing age. However, the association between Alzheimer's disease and prostate cancer remains unclear. And then it goes on to talk about this new study. So what this says is that if you have prostate cancer, you're more likely to have Alzheimer's. So what does Alzheimer's and prostate cancer then have in common? It doesn't address this question. It's simple. I've dealt with tens of thousands of men with prostate problems and other problems. It's a highly estrogen-based diet with lots of protein. Now, why is that important? Because when you have a high protein diet, when you have abdominal fat, meaning a belly, and when you're stressed, all three are predictors of increasing the amount of estrogen in your body. That's not a good thing, because increases in women in estrogen and men in estrogen can promote breast cancer in women, ovarian cancer in women, endometrial cancer in women, and prostate cancer in men. So that's why a plant-based diet gives you lower but better quality protein that is actually protective, because it's a different type of estrogen. The estrogen coming from animal protein is much more significant. It is known as a 16, where the plant-based is 2, and you want the 2, not the 16. So when you go towards a plant-based diet and you're taking essential fatty acids like the omega-3 and coconut oil and olive oil, you're turning off inflammation. When you're eating meat, you're turning on inflammation. Arachidonic acid is highly, highly inflammatory. And both inflammation of the prostate can lead to prostate enlargement and prostate cancer, and inflammation of the brain can lead to dementia and Alzheimer's. So the common risk factor is inflammation. So anything that creates inflammation, get rid of it. And what promotes healing, bring it in. Your green vegetables, kale, chard, collard greens, microgreens, watercress, arugula, these are all healing. What creates inflammation? Hot dogs, hamburgers, buns, pretzels, potato chips, french fries, pizzas. That's what causes inflammation. So a healthy diet, snacking on watermelon seeds, pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, flax seeds, all good. So turn off the inflammation and help yourself. And finally, there's been a lot of problems with MS pain. And a lot of people take opiates. That's very dangerous. So here are some natural pain relievers, especially for multiple sclerosis. Cinnamon. That's correct. Cinnamon is great as an anti-inflammatory. So you use cinnamon in your drinks in the morning, or put it on a hot millet or hot oatmeal. It's terrific. A balanced and eye movement exercise. People with multiple sclerosis generally have severe balance disorders. So therefore, eye movement exercises can help steady a person on their feet. So people who participate in body eye movement exercises tend to have better balance. Then a plant-based diet, similar to that which is served in the Mediterranean. We're talking about the Greek diet, the Italian diet, the Spanish diet. These are mainly plant-based diets. They do have some fish, but lots of nuts and seeds and beans and fresh vegetables. And then vitamin D is also good at modulating and balancing the immune system. And the higher your level of vitamin D, especially with your early on progression of multiple sclerosis, the better outcome you have. So just some simple things, not all the heavyweights in there, but things that can make a difference. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. Before we take a break, let me just mention that we are carried on a lot of stations. Plus, we're broadcast all over the world. We're the number one progressive radio program in the world, and we have a lot of people listening and sharing information. And on my Facebook page, which people can read, we post about 60 to 70 articles a day on themes that you're not getting in the mainstream media. But the most important way people listen to the show is they listen by telephone or downloading from archives. So you no longer have to worry about, well, I missed a show. Anywhere you have your cell phone, on the cell phone is an app, and one of the apps, go to the store on the app on your cell phone, and you can download PRN.FM. That way, anywhere you can have a cell phone, you can listen to this radio program. But we also have our archives, and we can listen live over any portable listening device or just your regular telephone. Let me give you those two numbers, please. First, listening live. That's Monday to Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, and Tuesday, 7 to 8 for the Progressive Commentary Hour. Write it down, please. The number is 424-203-8046. 424-203-8046. Let's say you're busy at that time, so you want to listen later when it's more convenient. You can download up to five podcasts, five archive shows, by calling this number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. Now, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going right into around a five-minute segment between Tucker Carlson and this Kathy Arrow on the topic of sexism. And afterwards, I'm going to open it up for you to call in. I'll save my thoughts. I'd like for you to share yours on what you see this to mean, what she is discussing, what she is lobbying for, what she is hoping will become law. And our talkback number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Now to a break, and directly back from that into Tucker Carlson on the subject of sexism.
Time. Kathy Arrow is founding publisher of Catalina Magazine. She's our Sherpa into progressive America. She thinks this might not be a bad idea for our country, and she joins us tonight. Kathy, great to see you.
Hi, good to see you.
So you think that we could learn something from Belgium, that
yes.
maybe we should criminalize sexist speech.
Yes.
Would we also criminalize sexist thought? I'm just trying to get the parameters here.
I would say sexist speech and sexist thought is hateful speech and hateful thought, and people with those hateful thoughts go on to commit hateful crimes. So
okay.
yeah, why don't we nip it in the bud and stop these guys from continuing to go further and committing violent crimes?
Okay, so
yeah.
we're going to create a new class of thought crime. But you said guys. Would it ever conceivably apply to women? I was watching The Bachelor the other night, which is obviously an hour-long exploitation of women. Hard to think of a more sexist spectacle than that. And a lot of the producers are women. So would they be up for sexism charges in your world?
Absolutely not. You know that women as a minority in this country, even though we are the majority, we're still the minority because white men are in charge. And
okay.
it's hard to be a sexist and put the majority down when you're still considered the minority. So,
okay.
no, women cannot be sexist. We are the victims of sexism.
But what if you were like Anna Wintour? Okay, and you had a magazine
yeah.
wholly devoted to exploiting women's bodies and basically encouraging eating disorders. Because you're a woman, you still would not be sexist?
Well, that's an industry that makes a living off of those things. And believe it or not, the highest paid people, women in the world, are models. So unfortunately, the only way that women could make more money than men are through modeling and through these magazines. So she actually did a favor to women by showing them in these magazines and
wow.
helping women make more than men. So sadly.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, sadly. So sexist speech and sexist thought will be criminalized.
Yeah, because it's hateful.
In the Republic of Kathy Arrow. What would the punishment be? Would these be misdemeanors or felonies?
Well, I mean, I think these men would move on to commit crimes. So shouldn't we nip it in the bud? Shouldn't we listen to people when they're saying hateful things and get them right when they're saying these sexist comments?
Right.
And, yeah, make it a felony. Put them away. Make them learn their lesson. And when they come out, they'll be better people. So teach them a lesson.
Maybe they would come out as sad and broken people. Would that bother you?
I don't think they'd be. Well, if they're not hurtful and violent, I it would not upset me if they're sad. No. I mean, they're sad, but they're not.
Okay, and it continues on from there. So this is a woman who is one of the most popular Latino advocates, or advocates for Latino women in America. And I looked into her background. I found some very disturbing things she had to say, but I will hold what I found that she had said on other issues, including that breast cancer is not, breastfeeding is not normal, doesn't advocate. But a husband or a male feeding a formula to an infant is. That's just one of many statements. Here's the point. So listen to the proper context. Please understand the context. I believe that people in a free society should have the right to say whatever they want. I can agree or disagree with it. But it's their right. I do not believe in censorship. I do not believe in denying people forum, because if I deny them a forum, then who would deny me one who disagrees with my point of view? But think of the consequences of someone who takes it to a level where it's being advocated as laws against thought, as well as what you could say. So who is to deem what is considered, let's say, sexist, or thought that would offend someone, thought that would make someone feel insecure? Now go to the generation in colleges, especially the Ivy League colleges today, who are having professors removed, fired, including tenured professors, because the professor said something in class that no one else was offended by, but one person was, and they made it an issue, and next thing you know, the class is being boycotted, and more often than not, the faculty and the administrators acquiesce. They don't want angry students, and then that free speech is no longer there. Even if what was said by the professor, by any reasonable measure, was the normal discussion of issues, someone felt that there was something wrong with it. Now go to a movie that Tom Cruise made years ago. It was a good sci-fi film, but it was about thought police, where they could see a crime in someone's mind before it was being committed, then arrest the person so the crime wouldn't be committed. Okay, that was long ago. Here's what we have today, and I gave you specifics on this in an in-depth commentary I did about a month and a half ago. Artificial intelligence has advanced to the stage now. It's not new. They've been working on this for at least 25 years, where not only can they create a artificial intelligence that is able to go beyond any controls, meaning you can't control it. You can't turn off its programming. You can't alter its programming. It has the capacity to find ways of protecting itself, and it can weaponize itself, and it can be disruptive, and it can be deadly. You then, on the other hand, have medicines that have been nanoparticleized, meaning a medicine is such tiny amounts, or a chemical, not necessarily a medicine, that can be used in the environment or in humans. The trouble is there's been not one single long-term health study done on this. It's always, let's get our product into a person's body. Now they're advocating that medicines be put into an artificial intelligence form so that it goes in your body and then it will know that you're eating the right diet or taking the other meds you need to keep your blood pressure down. That's the excuse they're using. Well, people are not good at maintaining their discipline when it comes to their health, and this medicine will help see that it do that. They are even suggesting at one point of getting genetically engineered crops that have vaccines in the DNA of the food. So when you ate the food, you would automatically be vaccinated. That way everyone would be maintaining their vaccination rates of whatever was considered important to be in their body. A, what if you ate a lot of that food? You're going to have massive amounts of that chemical in your body. They didn't seem to address that issue or its safety. When regular vaccines are not shown to be safe, let alone effective. But now they're taking it to a point where you wouldn't have a choice. And that is extreme. And then the final, there is now artificial intelligence that is now engaged in transhumanism, where they can take a human being and by implanting special programs by tiny chips, or what they call new seeds, these are even smaller, they're able to put hundreds of thousands a piece of information into you. They could read your thoughts or control your behavior. This is a part of what Newt Gingrich and others in 2000 started as a way of developing smarter, better, stronger human beings. Today we know that the number one sponsors behind all this and the beneficiaries are the military-industrial complex. They want to make sure that no matter what is done, it's a way of controlling the people and it can be weaponized. What could possibly go wrong with that? So we're not talking about science fiction. We're not talking about something far in the future. I remember once on ABC when I did my show for 12 years on WABC on Sunday nights. Many of you, I'm sure, listened back then. And I talked about the first of the chips about the size of a grain of rice being implanted in people at that time. People thought it was nonsense. Now it's common knowledge, and instead of looking at the health consequences or the control consequences, they're looking at, let's sign up to get it. It's really hip. Just like the latest cell phones. They propagandize to make you want the G5, and tomorrow I'm going to be doing a newsmaker update with one of the members of our audience who's a very conscientious consumer advocate. Her name is Deborah Copaid, and she's going to tell you why we should be really concerned about the New York Assembly is removing part of the budget that would have gutted home rule and forced G5 transmitters on poles without review, meaning the citizens would not have an opportunity in any neighborhood or even with a building that the pole was on or beside to say, I don't want something transmitting this powerful beam, because there are multiple studies showing adverse health effects, the brain, the pineal gland, the thyroid gland, and I don't want it. You would have none of that. So we're going to bring you up to date on what this is going on tomorrow. But who would have thought? Because you won't see a single negative thing reported in any of the advertisements. Instead, you see hip people and the rappers and the movie stars all dancing and singing about, hey, we got to have the latest best of this. It can do everything for us. And so a generation so caught up into the power of social media to do things for them, to think for them, to be liked by people, to friend people you've never met, never will meet, and to be influenced by peer pressure, they're going to embrace this completely. So why wouldn't we, as this woman says, want to make it a crime, a felony, if you had a thought that it was perceived would be a sexist thought? And you would go to jail for it. Not a misdemeanor. She said a criminal offense. And if it went bad for you in prison, she doesn't care, as most people don't. When was the last time you cared about all the people who were innocently convicted? And by the way, for those of you who are not paying attention, why don't you do your homework? Find out how many people of color, mainly African-American men, have been convicted, challenged, convicted, and sent to jail for sexual offense that was later found out they were not guilty of. How about three black guys just recently by a woman who made up the offense and got a lot of followings on and a lot of likes and a lot of crying tears on Facebook, but it turns out she was lying. What the hell do you think that did to those young men's reputation and their states of mind? So today, just challenging someone, saying someone did something, that's all that's needed. We no longer need courts, juries, we no longer need evidence, we no longer need the Fourth Amendment. Why do we have habeas corpus? If you're accused, you're guilty. No matter what it is, no matter who accuses you, you're guilty. That's the mindset right now in America. Any problems with that? Think before you answer. Think. That's something we're not doing, and especially the younger generation. So the question is, should we have thought police, which means that men, only men, as if women cannot be sexist. Remember, she said it, women cannot be sexist. How would you like to respond to that? I'll hold my thoughts. I want to hear yours. And that you should go to prison for having a thought until I'm sure that there would be a private industry that would come in and rehabilitate you. You know, like in Vietnam, how they rehabilitated, and in Cambodia, the rehabilitation camps. Oh, I forgot, Pol Pot. Not a whole lot of rehabilitating, but 2.5 million people. people killed, and the Chinese rehabilitation under Mao Zedong and the Cultural Revolution, and Stalin's rehabilitation. Yeah. Rehabilitate people's thoughts. And then something that I was thinking when I saw Mel Gibson in an interview, very simple interview, and he talked about his highs and lows, and that how he had a period of life where he was not able to control or chose not to control his actions and was dropped down drunk a lot, made a lot of bad choices. And when he was arrested, he was cursing and making some anti-Semitic and stupid statements by any measure. And that destroyed his career for a long period of time. And he was the target. This is what happens when you're an out-of-control, rich, spoiled Hollywood person. And I thought, hold on, stop that right there. If we're going to condemn him and destroy his career because he got drunk and made some stupid, insensitive, and thoughtless statements, are any of us equally guilty? Have we ever, once in our life, fought something that if it were made public, it would just destroy us and embarrass us and humiliate us because it was so stupid and vulgar? And who do you know who's never had that thought or who has not said something? But you're not Mel Gibson, you're not famous. Do we have to have two standards? If you're the average person, you can be as stupid as you want, say anything you want, think anything you want. No one's going to know it. If you're famous, then you get hung by your own petard. What hypocrisy. Boy, we're good at that. So now let's just imagine that there's enough of the younger generation that gets behind this movement to criminalize thought. So then you would have to have it policed. And the only way you could police thought is you'd have to have it mandatory, and you'd have to have that new artificial intelligence, that transhumanistic and that science that would be praised. The whole emphasis would be on what it can read and any negative thoughts that could potentially lead you to do something dangerous, and therefore finding you and putting you away is the best thing to save society. But you couldn't have any of that done if you're a woman, because women have never in history had a sexist thought. Whoa. Your thoughts. 888-874-4888. I don't have any problem with anyone coming on any medium and making statements. I do have a problem when we remain silent when we should speak up. Because today, with everything being commodified, everything being pathologized, everything being labeled, imagine the consequences of mandatory nanotechnology and then being monitored for your thoughts. You think that's science fiction? You are misinformed. That is reality, and that is capable today. It just needs that brush fire to cause it. And then we rush into something. Remember 9/11? Gee whiz, what did we rush into there? $6 trillion in debt? 7 wars started, 200,000 bombs dropped, over 4 million people's lives destroyed, over 40 million people displaced. What could possibly go wrong? Back in a moment, but instead of taking a break, we're going to go to our second point here. And I want to share this from Professor Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T, where he calls Facebook a social catastrophe. Please listen in.
Media, which hit just as iGen, so iGen, Internet Generation, this is Gene Twenge's work. You know, we used to think that the millennial generation ends in 1998 or 2000, but Gene Twenge shows, looking at 4 large data sets, that birth year 1995, kids born in 1995 and after, are really different. Their values are different. They have much higher rates of anxiety and depression, especially the girls. Boys have gone up, girls have gone way up. And the reason seems to be that Facebook lowered its age. So in 2005, you had to be a college student at a certain number of colleges to get Facebook. In 2006, you could be any 11-year-old who lies and says that she's 13 and you've got a Facebook account. But then you're using it on your parents' PC. And it's, in 2007, the iPhone comes out, and it saturates the market faster than any consumer product ever has. So by 2010 or 11, a lot of adolescents have Facebook and other social platforms. And this is just devastating, especially to girls, because it's not texting. Texting is just me to you, you know, that's back and forth. That's fine. That, you know, when we were kids, you called your friends on the phone. That's fine. The problem seems to be, according to Twenge, it's especially platforms in which you put something out and then you wait and see what everyone says about
right.
it. And that especially is damaging to girls who already are at risk of eating disorders and image disorders.
Okay, so girls become more susceptible to negative emotion when they hit puberty.
Well, that's right. That's always been the case.
But then there's another issue, too, with regards to female aggression. So, you know, it's clearly the case that males are more likely to be physically damaging / aggressive than females are. But what females use is reputation savaging.
That's right. So that's Nikki Crick's work. Nikki Crick, passed away a couple years ago, showed that if you add it all up, boys and girls are equally aggressive. But the boys' aggression is more physical, the girls' is more relational. So if you imagine a bunch of 13, 14-year-olds in their middle schools, and then you parachute in a whole bunch of iPhones, right. Everybody's got one in their pocket.
It's an amplifier.
What are the boys going to do? They're going to play video games.
Yeah.
And that doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
But the girls are going to use it to amplify the social interactions. So this is Twenge's explanation. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So it's a catastrophe. It's a crisis. And we're really hurting, especially the girls. Mm-hmm. So we've got to change something about that. Anyway, but social media is possibly the largest single reason why things are going haywire on campus. The third big factor.
And do you think it's primarily Facebook, or can you tell?
Well, the kids use a lot of different platforms. But from what I hear, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. The thing is, it's one to many. That's what's bad. If you put something out there and you see how many people like it,
right.
That's what's bad.
Right, and there's always the threat that it'll go viral in a terrible
exactly.
way. So that's like
right.
a hammer.
Exactly.
There's a sword of Damocles over your head.
That's perfect.
Unlimited sort of damage.
Unlimited downside to saying something. So what do you do? So they're
right.
all careful.
Right, right.
So I don't know if I want to like that post because, you know, I could get in big trouble for it.
Right, well, the benefit to liking it is minimal and the potential catastrophe for discipline.
Unless you're expected to like it, in which case
right.
you better like it because if you don't like it, you'll get in trouble. So it's a much more of a mob mentality. Kids are afraid. You know, I'm not blaming the kids. I'm very sympathetic to them. I mean, these are my kids. My kids are 11 and 7. They're going to come up into this. So the kids have been raised in a social environment that's much more about mob formation and mob attacks and defenses against mobs.
And
that's
exactly
the dynamic
the
of a witch hunt. That's how we know we're in this super religious territory of witch hunts, that if you stand up for someone, you are tagged, and then you will be mobbed.
Right.
And that's why there's so much disease.
Exactly.
And that's why there's so much cowardice on campus among both students and faculty. People are afraid to stand up. Even if the majority think that what's going on is nuts or is unfair, they're afraid to stand up. And that's in part due to social media because students today have been raised with various platforms that make it easy for people to join in, attack someone. They look at who liked what. So if in that article we just saw on Reed, there was a bit of a counter-revolution at
yeah,
Reed.
Yeah.
The students had to get together somehow and decide, should I like that post? How about if we all like it at the same time?
Right.
Then we'll get in less trouble. Okay.
Right.
Okay. That is part of that discussion. It's a longer discussion, but I at least want to show you how many of the problems that we're seeing in the younger individuals are coming, where they're coming from, social media, where there are no filters, where there's no guidance, where there's no parental input, where there's no ability to control the quality of the information, the accuracy of the information, or the impact of that information upon a young developing mind, a mind that has not been in the workforce, has not been in the larger world, has not been responsible for themselves, and yet they're being inundated with stimulation, and that is then going to cause some challenges, and we're seeing that. And I want to go for a moment over, and I want to take some calls. I want you to give me your points of view, and before I get into depth on my own, all right? And our number to talk with us is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888, and because this is happening, let's say hello first to Jim from New Jersey. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Gary. It's Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Hi. I wrote down a few notes. I think that they're similar to what you covered. The notion that the sexist thoughts, apparently she has been involved with these people who have the plan for the distributing these nanochips to everyone, which would be the method by which they would do that. There's a manufacturer that's making those. When I look them up, I'll look it up again and let you know what that is. They're over by Groom Lake somewhere. That women cannot be sexist. What a preposterous statement! And it's as if she can. It suddenly becomes true just because it comes out of her mouth. No substantiation whatsoever for her claim. Ridiculous, in my opinion. And then the models are being done a favor because they have the highest pay among women, but are being actually used as suggestive sex objects by a carefully structured design.
You've made several good points. I'm only going to focus on one of them. When she said that women such as Anne, and by the way, has anyone ever taken a look at the fashion of Anne Wintour? She looks like she's got a, what was the Betty Bo Peep or something like that, that little hairdo? Or the who was the little girl on the paint bucket?
Betty Boop.
Betty Boop. I mean, she is criticizing other people, and she is tyrannical in her personality, and everybody bows down to her in the fashion world. She's arguably the most powerful woman in the fashion world. How many times have women in the fashion world been impacted by low self-esteem, the vagaries of the business, the amount of sexism rampant in the business? And I could tell you a lot of stories about the fashion industry because and the modeling industry, because one of my longtime quality relationships was with an artist who was also one of the most beautiful models in the world. And so I got to meet a lot of her friends and had honest conversations to where I was actually going to do a documentary on it and interviewed over 100. The entire industry is rampant with sexism, and that's principally controlled by women. Mm-hmm. And getting skinny, ending up with bulimia. You have no idea how many people I've counseled who have bulimia, anorexia.
Dreadful.
And the industry was using these models who were not the highest paid in the world. By the way, not by a long measure. Not only were they not the highest paid in the world, they wouldn't even be in the top 10 groups of women who've made. Scientists have made far more. Physicians have made far more. Entrepreneurs have made more women entrepreneurs. And now more women are being entrepreneurial and opening their own businesses than men. And those who've run major corporations. I can name at least 12 corporations, Fortune 500 corporations, run by women. They work themselves up. They deserve the status, the credit, and the rewards of that. And they're earning far more than any model. So on all those points, I would share a difference of opinion. But Jim, Tim, thank you for calling in, sharing your point of view.
Okay.
Let's say hello to Gino from New York. Gino, you're on the air.
Oh, good day, Gary. I know you're birthdaying. I know officially it was the other day, so a joyful, healthy birthday to you.
No, it was in January. You're off a little bit, but thank you.
Oh, I thought it was March.
Tell us your point for calling in.
January 6th. Okay, well, to add to what the lady was saying about, criminalized thoughts, I mean, I'm thinking... as far as ladies go, I'll give a list of people with actions besides thoughts of hateful nature. Hillary Clinton, Madeleine Albright, as you said many times, it's okay to kill 500,000 innocent children in a war of lies. Jean Kirkpatrick, Nikki Haley, Condoleezza Rice. So they're all exempted because, what, they're in the minority or the majority. But basically, this is just another symptom of people who are not in touch with their spiritual nature. I mean, I'd like to know if she gave any kind of feedback on all the crimes we've committed that you've listed many times over the years, of how many people have been killed over lies, as John Perkins points out, our usual techniques. So the actions don't count. Poisoning Americans with the water in Flint, Michigan, giving more money to the rich, and that the homes that will be broken up and the people who displaced from their homes, that's not hateful. So she's got you on thoughts, so it's got us thinking about thoughts. But actions don't matter. So, again, it's a symptom of people who are out of touch with their spiritual nature, who obviously don't believe that karma is as real as gravity. Now, Gary, I'd just like to say also that the people you had on who've been healed, I really enjoy those talks of them speaking from their experience, very, very heartfelt talks, the results they're getting that they didn't get with the medical establishment. And the talks you give with the animals and saving them and the healing and the way they bond with each other, different species, I really enjoy that. And just on the last note, I don't know if you know of this new man, Sadhguru. He's only about 61, and he's got excellent speeches on YouTube. He's coming to he's got a place in Texas, in Nashville, where he's training people to get in touch with their inner nature. He'd be a great guest. There's not many out there that really move me that are still alive.
Do this. Send any not just for you, Gino, but anyone in the audience who has someone that we don't know about who would make a good guest, please send it to prnstudio@gmail.com, and Richard Gale or Jesse or one of the producers will take a look at it, and we'll look into it. We're always open to having new minds that can empower people on the air. Thank you, Gino.
Very good. Gary, are you still there?
All the best. We got to go because I've got a lot of luck calls here. Let's say hello to Gwen from New York. Hi, Gwen. Your turn.
I think that listening to the woman who just spoke, she might be one of those people that looks back at what she said and can't believe that she said what she said, because it is breathtaking what she said. And what I want to tell you, all the men, hang on. I don't think women are, I think she's way in the minority. I don't think women feel that way. But I think that we're, the movement that we're in right now is changing and sort of pushing, well, it's not only pushing us that way, but it is dangerous to lock people up without finding out what they did, to destroy their careers. I would agree with you. I am a rape survivor. I was raped when I was 16, when I was a virgin. And I want to tell you from a personal experience that it does ruin your life, ruined my life for a long, long time. I remember when I went to the doctor and she told me it was my fault. So I never told anybody about it. And it took years of my life before I went to a therapist. And, you know, we talked about this incident, but I still assumed it was my fault. So why I'm bringing this up is it's very, very traumatic, and it creates incredible anger. And most victims don't talk about what happened to them. They really do hold it in. And when I heard that woman talking about it, the first actress, I felt so relieved, because to hear somebody else finally say, like, I heard her speak my experience. And for years, you know, I never spoke about it. And I just empathize with it. But the movement has gone into this place now where I don't think we're not talking about sexual violence. We're talking about ridiculous things like, you know, somebody tried to kiss me and I didn't want that, so he's got to lose his job. I mean, I happen to think Al Franken, of all the pigs that are up there, was a good voice, or a relatively good voice. And when he did, he wasn't a congressman, he wasn't a senator, and apparently he didn't even touch this woman. So to me, to trivialize this movement down to stuff like that is ridiculous. And I also think that the Democrats shot themselves in the foot in that one. I think that we are supposed to be a country of laws. And although there has been, I've experienced a great deal of sexism in my life. However, I also want to say I too was in the fashion industry for a long time. And there, I didn't. I have to say, it wasn't warm and cozy. Women are really competitive, really hard. But I never had somebody judge me or ask me any questions or demean me because I was a female. That wasn't until I actually got out into being an activist where I saw a lot of sexism. But it's not an easy world either. It's not a bed of roses just because there's no sexism. There's lots of other fighting to be done.
Gwen, thank you very much. Just to emphasize what you said, having counseled an awful lot of women, tens of thousands in my career, I believe that we should double down on emphasizing that trauma of an individual basis, it doesn't matter what everyone else's trauma is, that's real to that person. And what we should have in the United States, in every community, we should have centers where people can go who've had any form of trauma, not just sexual, post-traumatic stress disorder. Think of all the soldiers of the Vietnam War and other conflicts. Think of people who've lived in inner cities who've been suffering from trauma because every day many of their neighborhoods have been taken over by gangs. And they're afraid to go outside because older people are more susceptible to being mugged. And that creates its own trauma where the quality of your life, as its days are numbering down, you frequently have to have someone go do your shopping, go do your banking. That's a real trauma to that person. So we should never trivialize in any form of trauma. We should recognize it for what it is, and we should seek both to be empathetic and to try to help a person through that trauma. And I certainly support all of the treatments and all of the efforts to make sure that we never trivialize anything that's of a serious offense to another person, an unwanted attack upon another person. There are laws on the books. I'm glad that we have made ourselves conscious of this across the board. Thank you, Gwen, for your input. George, you're our last caller today because we have no more time.
Hi, Gary. Yeah, I've lived internationally in a number of places, and I've heard sexist remarks from women in German, Russian, and Japanese. I went to school in Japan, and I was like a bonbon to these gals because I had blonde hair, tall and thin. And I tell you, I've been felt up on the trains and chased by married women, things like that, and unwanted stuff. So this stuff about sexism, like it's a one-way street, give me a break.
Okay. I've held my thoughts because I wanted you to share yours. This is an open forum. We can agree or disagree upon what someone is saying. We should be civil, and we should be thoughtful about how what someone says could impact us or other people. My concern is that what this person is advocating would be one more step of trying to pathologize just being a man, that all problems in the universe stem from the masculine, never the feminine. And it continues this new feminist ideology of looking at men as if anything representing masculinity is a disease. And I will take that issue on tomorrow's program. Thank you, Tim, Gino, Gwen, and George, for your input. Much appreciated. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tonight on the Progressive Commentary. Very powerful. You won't want to miss tonight's show. Have a nice day.